You're with The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. If you're young, have ovaries, and are looking to make some cash, you may have been tempted by ads on social media or sites like Craigslist to become an egg donor. What that means is you'll get paid, sometimes thousands of dollars, to have your eggs harvested and then ultimately fertilized so another person struggling with infertility can have a child. But the industry is fairly unregulated, and the health effects of donating are not well studied. That means that some people can end up surprised by a process that could be riskier than advertised. Diane Tober is an anthropologist trying to understand this process, so she's been doing her own research into the experience of egg donation. She's an assistant professor at the University of California, San Francisco, in the Institute for Health and Aging. Diane, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about the process of egg donation. What does it physically mean for a woman to donate eggs?
Yes, the medical process involves self-injecting hormones for several weeks. And then at the end of about 3 weeks or so, they inject what's called a trigger shot. And then about 48 hours after administering the trigger shot, they go through a medical procedure under anesthesia in which there's an ultrasound-guided needle that goes up through the vaginal canal, pierces through the wall, and then to reach the ovary. And then the instrument sucks out the mature eggs from the follicles, and then they go down into a tube, and then the woman wakes up about 20 minutes later.
Now, this is, of course, surgery that you're describing.
Correct. It's a surgical procedure.
What's the population of women who are donating their eggs? And I guess the word here, donating, is somewhat odd because they're actually getting paid to do this, right? They're not giving away eggs for free.
That's correct, especially in the United States, where the range of compensation can be quite substantial. I've heard as women being paid as low as a few hundred dollars to, on average, about $7,000 to $10,000. And then the highest I've heard is $250,000 for an Asian donor with specific traits to match a Chinese recipient from China. So there's a very wide range in compensation. Most people don't get paid that much. And yeah, it's not donating. It's harvesting for pay, potentially, or providing eggs. I often use the term egg provision rather than egg donation, especially when it comes to the U.S. context.
Who are these companies? And what are they? How do they benefit from these procedures?
Right. Well, there's different levels. You have egg donation agencies, and the agencies are pretty much go-betweens between the clinics and the donors and the recipient parents. So recipients might go to an agency to be matched with a donor, and then they both will go to the clinic and do the egg harvesting process at the particular clinic. There are also egg banks. So a person who wanted to donate their eggs or provide eggs could go to an egg bank and do the whole process directly through an egg bank, in which case the eggs would then be frozen and used to sell to somebody else later down the road. And then there's also private clinics and university clinics that have their own individual private internal egg donation programs. And, you know, this is a substantial industry, so it is a for-profit industry. People are making a lot of money at it, and donors are, of course, making money as well. But, you know, an egg donation cycle can usually run about $26,000 when you have one recipient and one donor matched through a clinic. And of that, the donor might receive $7,000 to $10,000.
Diane, how is this different than sperm donation? Because we hear sperm donation all the time. It's almost felt like it's a normal thing. What is the difference between egg donation and sperm donation?
Well, that's a really good question. And I did, my earlier research was looking at sperm donation and single men and lesbian couples using sperm donors and sperm donors as well. And I came to this research because an egg donor had reached out to me and knew about my work with sperm donors. And she was concerned about some of the experiences she had seen with some of the women in her group. And when I had first embarked on this journey, so to speak, of interviewing and conducting research with egg donors, I pretty much assumed it'd be very similar to what sperm donors went through, even though, of course, I knew it was a different procedure, but it never really dawned on me that just how rigorous a procedure and process it was. It's a much more invasive process. And again, like I said, women have to self-inject hormones into their bodies for several weeks. We really have no idea what the long-term or short-term effects of those hormones are on women's bodies. And I also should add here, in my study, I do have two transgender men who are egg donors before they transition. So not all egg donors identify as women, but the majority do. So I'm still using the term women. But yeah, so it's a vastly different process than sperm donation. And that's why people who provide eggs are compensated substantially higher than sperm donors. But it is a difficult procedure to go through. And there is potential harm that can come out of it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the harm, because one of the things that stood out to me here in this study is that this is let's be clear, this is a voluntary procedure, and the expectation is these women will be compensated for that. So what are the risks that these women are saying they're not understanding when they undergo this voluntary procedure?
Well, this is the key. First of all, the issue of informed consent, okay? So when a person decides they're going to provide eggs, they go through this informed consent process. And in the informed consent process, they're frequently told that the risks are less than 1% or that egg donation is very safe.
The risks to what, Diane? I just want to understand. The risk to harvesting eggs or the risk to...
The overall risks of going through the process like this, with whether it's, you know, through the drugs and the procedures, that the overall risks to their bodies is about 1%, okay? And then I'll get to exactly what I've seen in my research in a moment. So people who are doing this are told that the risks are less than 1%. They're told that, you know, there is no evidence of short-term or long-term harm. And in fact, there's really no evidence because the research hasn't been done. And the data that's being used to say that the risks are less than 1% only applies to a small, like one specific type of complication that can occur called severe ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome. Now, severe ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome is when the body builds up with fluid post-retrieval. In the severe form, you end up in the hospital having to have the fluid drained. So there's very little information available for women who provide eggs in the United States with the protocols that physicians are using here, with the high numbers of eggs that are being produced and so on. And what I've seen in my study are complications such as ovarian torsion. So the ovary twists in the body and then has to be surgically removed because the blood supply is cut off to the ovary. I've seen at least 7 to 10%, I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, that have had severe ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome. I've got two women out of about 300 that had critical ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome and almost died. And then you have the moderate form of ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, which is basically you have to be on bed rest for a couple of weeks and wait till the swelling goes down. And those are the immediate short-term complications. What we don't know, however, is to what degree the hormones that are used can affect long-term health implications such as endometriosis, reproductive cancers that are estrogen dependent, autoimmune disorders, and other issues like that. So those are some of the things that I've been seeing in the 340 or so now women that have gone through my survey and the 100 women that I've interviewed.
Diane Tober is an anthropologist and assistant professor at the University of California, San Francisco's Institute for Health and Aging, and she's conducting research on the decisions and experiences of egg donors. Diane, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.